Lane bench. There's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it goes. Put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. It is Monday, March 3rd. Welcome to March and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's where you can get us on Flames Talk. And, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text line's always open if you're listening live at 960-960. Hola, Vix. Happy Monday.
Whoa. Caught me off guard.
¿Cómo estás?
Yeah, words and stuff.
Hey, the Flames have scored in the last 9 periods.
Factually correct.
Last 9 periods plus, because there's
a little overtime.
3 minutes of overtime in there. This has been interesting. It's been a while since I can remember the Flames having this type of issue scoring goals. On Sunday afternoon in a 2-1 overtime loss to Carolina, where honestly Dustin Wolf was spectacular and helped steal him a single point in that game. Flames had a goalless drought of more than 170 minutes. Until Nazem Kadri scored that power play goal Sunday afternoon. And with this recent run of scoring difficulties, Flames now tied for 31st overall, just over 2.5 goals per game. And they are the lowest scoring team in goals per game at 5-on-5. So the Flames are one of, if not the lowest scoring team in the NHL. It has been a long time since the Flames have been this low in terms of their goal scoring. And yet, on Monday, March 3rd, as we're talking and looking deep into one another's eyes, the Flames, by virtue of a tiebreak, sit in a playoff spot in the Western Conference.
Hey,
that in and of itself is a bonkers yet somewhat miraculous story.
If they make the playoffs, it'll be in spite of their goal scoring, not because of it. I think that much is clear as it stands right now. And yeah, you run through any offensive metric and it's down from last season, including being down half a goal per game on average year over year. And again, this is the system deployed by the Calgary Flames by coach Ryan Huska, where there is more emphasis on defensive structure and play than offensive structure and play. That's just a fact. It's not as though Ryan Huska doesn't want his team to go out there and score more than 2.5 goals per game. He would love it if they'd give their goaltending right. A little bit more run support. But with the personnel that they have, this is how the team as a unit is deployed when they hit the ice. And you will sacrifice a little bit of offense. You will sacrifice the run-and-gun style in order to execute it. And to be fair, the system has worked more often than not for the Flames. That's why we're talking about a team that is tied for 31st in the NHL in goals per game. Literally no team has scored fewer goals per game than the Flames. That's why we're still sitting here talking about the playoffs being a reality, because more often than not, they've managed to execute their system in a way that allows them to win.
So they are a top half team at 5-on-5 high danger chances against per 60. They are averaging where would that be? That would put them in 13th overall over at Natural Stat Trick in terms of what they're preventing. So they're a top half team in terms of preventing high danger chances, but they're also it's not like they're just a snake bitten group. There's a little bit of finishing issue for sure. They're 32nd overall in terms of 5-on-5 goals per game. They're and 5-on-5 goals per 60, but they're 25th overall in high danger chances per 60. So there's a little bit of an offset there, but nonetheless, this is one of the more offensively anemic teams in the NHL, both in what they're generating for high quality opportunities and what they're actually converting. So I don't really think that we're going to be talking about a significant uptick in the final 22 games. Now, I do think there are ways that they could be slightly more dangerous. I do think there are ways that they could score slightly more. And obviously, this stretch has been incredibly difficult to score. But I mean, if Farabee and or Frost figure it out in a pretty meaningful way, then that's going to help. If Sharangovich can go on a run of, I don't know if Sharangovich is going to fully figure it out between now and the end of the season, but if he can go on a run of 8 or 9 games where he's scoring and the puck's going in and his confidence level's a little higher, maybe that could help. But I mean, we're 60 games in, Vix. It's a large enough sample size. These guys are what they are. They are a really sound defensive group. They work their tails off. They do everything in their power to limit quality opportunities. And they also have strong goaltending. We're talking about, again, one of the best goaltending teams in the NHL. And the numbers have dropped from where they were in the first half of the season, but we're still talking about, as a team, the number 2 5-on-5 save percentage in the NHL at .928.
Woo.
So we know how they're doing it. They're doing it by being strong defensively, attempting to keep teams to the outside on a regular basis, and getting outstanding goaltending. And they remain a top 10 team in overall save percentage. They're number 9 with a .906 save percentage at all strengths. That's how they've been able to offset their extreme issues scoring goals.
We've spent more than one segment over the course of the last couple of months trying to figure out this Flames offense, and is it capable of more? How do you generate more? So on and so forth. And I've always kind of gone back to, well, when is it hardest to score in the NHL? It's in the playoffs. And what do playoff teams successfully do to find offense? And a lot of it is screens, tips, second chance opportunities, third chance opportunities around the net front. Let me float this by you.
Ooh.
I had a scout ask me when the Farabee Frost deal went down, and I quote, "When do you get concerned about the Flames' lack of size up front?" And I kind of shrugged it off when I got it there, because I'm not necessarily the biggest proponent of size equaling offense, but of their regulars, only Jonathan Huberdeau at 6'1", Martin Pospisil and Kevin Rooney at 6'2", as well as Sharangovich at 6'2". Those are the only guys north of 6 feet. In an ideal scenario, that's 50% of your fourth line in Pospisil and Rooney. I'd argue, and I'm sure you'd agree, Sharangovich doesn't play like he's 6'2". So that leaves Huberdeau and the running power forward joke. Everyone else, 6 foot or smaller. So this kind of triggered me when we were watching the Tampa Bay Lightning game, when Calgary, full marks for effort, full marks for goaltending, full marks for a lot of things, but that defense kept Calgary's offense at arm's reach. That's a defense that averages 6'3", 213 pounds. Flames are one of the smallest and lightest teams in the league up front. Are they, as they're composed, we can park the structure idea for a second, but are they composed to be a team that can get to the front of the net when you're playing defenses like the Tampa Bay Lightning? That might be my concern for where is this team going to get more offense from.
Fair. Like, I can't sit here and say that that's wrong. I mean, that probably plays somewhat of a part. I mean, is it 40%? Is it 70%? Is it 23% of the issue? I don't know.
Now,
but I don't think that it's insignificant at all.
Now, in fairness, I'm not including Klapka because he's been in and out quite a bit. That's not including Anthony Mantha, who's been lost for the season. That doesn't include Justin Kirkland, who's been lost for the season. But when you look through your top 9, you've got Huberdeau and Sharangovich as being north of 6 foot. So battling for space, battling for position, battling to set the screens, battling for those second and third chance opportunities. I think it's tough for this group.
Now, this is, I went and did some research. Just a little, it didn't go too far back, but I did some cross-referencing, if you will. The Flames are sitting in a playoff spot right now. They're tied with Vancouver, but by virtue of having more regulation wins, the Flames do hold down the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. Each team has 65 points. Flames have 22 wins in regulation, Canucks 21. St. Louis is a point back with 2 more games played. Utah 2 points back with 1 more game played. It has turned into a 4-horse race for one spot. I don't think Colorado, nor do I think Los Angeles, are going to meaningfully be tracked down, although they could be, but it's a 5-point edge for the Kings, and they've played fewer games than everybody, and it's a 7-point gap for the Canucks. For the Avalanche. So, you know, if the Kings and Avalanche continue to play at around the same clip that they've played, they're going to get in. So it kind of feels like Calgary, Vancouver, St. Louis, Utah. That's what you're looking at. We'll talk about them in a little bit. But my cross-referencing led me to this. Since 2013-14, and that was just kind of my arbitrary cutoff, because I wanted to do 10 seasons, and I didn't count the stupid season, and I didn't count the season that was cut off. So not counting 2019-20 or the Canadian Division bizarre season, this is what we have for teams that have made the playoffs being as low-scoring a team as the Flames are. Last year, Washington was 28th overall at 2.63 goals per game. They made the playoffs. Dallas made the playoffs in 2018-19 at 2.55 goals per game. They were 29th overall. And here's maybe the one that can give you a little bit of hope. In 2013-14, the LA Kings were ranked 26th at 2.42 goals per game and won the Stanley Cup.
Let me ask you real quickly. So is that 9 full seasons we're talking?
Something like that. Yeah.
So, and 16 teams qualify, 16 times 9. That's 144 teams that qualified for the playoffs in that span. Only 3 have scored at a similar pace than the Flames this year. That's not encouraging math.
It's not.
That's 2%.
It's not.
Whew.
Not a lot of teams.
Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar need a raise.
Or some more run support.
Well, run support. Easier said than done, as we've determined.
If the Flames make the playoffs with how little they're scoring, it'll be an incredible accomplishment
Dustin
based
Wolf
on the
for
last
Calder.
Decade or so, right?
Dustin Wolf for Hart?
I mean...
I have never been on that bandwagon. I might have to get on it after you providing these numbers. Like... That would be rare air to qualify for the playoffs, as you mentioned, 3 teams in over the course of those 9 full seasons qualifying for the Stanley Cup playoffs, averaging in and around 2.53 goals per game. Wow.
Say,
that was quite the excursion you dug through there.
It's and I'm
doesn't
I
paint a great picture.
I might have missed a few. Like it was quick research, so there might be a few misses in there.
I mean, even if you missed by 50%, we're talking 4%.
My point is, if the Flames make the playoffs, it'll be one of the more against the odds playoff making that we've seen in recent years. Furthermore, they are a minus goal differential team. You don't see a lot of red teams make the playoffs in the goal differential. They're minus 21 in terms of their goal differential. Now, Washington, as I mentioned, made it like minus 500 last year, still made the playoffs. Detroit's in a playoff spot right now at minus 15. Minnesota is sitting third in the Central at minus 3.
So pretend that you're the head coach of the Flames and you're through 60 games of this campaign. Wouldn't that make you want to rely on your current system even more to try to limit as much as you can, as opposed to opening it up and trying to squeeze out another quarter goal per game? I think I would fall back and be like, okay, guys.
You kind of just have to, at this point, you're stuck with it. Kind of just had to lean in as this is what we are. We don't score a lot. We got to scratch out a lot of 1-0, 2-1 games, and we got to just lean into being a really strong defensive team, and we have to be a really strong goaltending team. That's what they are.
Well, again, I don't think there's a magic elixir where suddenly you're averaging 2.75 or 2.8 over the course of the final 22 games of the season to help alleviate some of those things, to help alleviate the one-goal games, to help alleviate if your goaltender happens to give up a single bad goal over the course of a 60-minute game. Because, I mean, that's a tight margin you're asking Wolf and Vladar to play, because one bad goal against can sink that entire game and your opportunity at 2 points.
Some text. This says, all these numbers are telling me what we've all known for a while. This team has no skill. And I don't think it's just a straight up lack of
black and white
skill and yeah, cut and dry. They don't have skilled players. What I think has happened is they looked at the roster, the coaching staff looked at what they had and said, okay, we're probably not going to be outscoring a lot of teams. And so systematically they have put together a group that and put together a game plan that focuses far more on not giving teams a whole lot and focusing a whole lot more on playing sound defensively. Now that hasn't been as successful the last two games because they were run over by Florida. They were run over by Carolina. And they came away with one of with a single point against the Hurricanes, which is quite frankly massive. Pretty remarkable and pretty important. But yeah, that's the type of team they need to lean into. And it's what they have leaned into. And I think it's more the game plan the coaching staff surmised. This is going to give us the best chance of getting points. And that could be why, that's my biggest hypothesis as to why the goals and the offense are down so much.
And I can't sit here and criticize Husk and the coaching staff for it because by and large, again, we have a large enough sample size, 60 games. By and large, it's worked more often than it hasn't. We're sitting here with it talking about a team that is holding down a playoff spot as it stands March 3rd. You would have told me that September 15th when camp broke. I might have looked at you a little squirrely. I'm not going to lie. So I can't even sit here and go, oh, Huska needs to adjust his system. He needs to open things up. He needs to start getting into track meets with the opposition.
We're 3/4 of the way through the year.
But simply because his strategy and the coaching staff strategy, by and large, has set this team up for success more than it has for failure. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what tweaks I would suggest at this point. Like, just you're dedicated. The players have bought in. Yeah, you've, over the course of the last three games, you've only scored one goal. But at some point, you're going to get, I was going to call it a three-goal outburst. That's a little tongue-in-cheek. That's a little rude. But you're going to see the Flames come out and have a three-goal game, a four-goal game, so on and so forth. Like, it'll balance itself out over 82 games. Not necessarily to the point where you're going to see the Flames launch into the top 25 in scoring in the NHL this season. But there will be some progression or some reverse regression, however you want to call it. But I can't criticize the coaching staff for the game plan they put together because it's worked.
This says no matter what happens, I think Huska and the staff have done an amazing job creating a great environment in the locker room and building a goal to work towards for the short term and long term. So I'm happy. Biff writes, where's Biff at? Same system as Sutter without Sutter being the coach. Nothing new or different with Huska being the coach. The Flames' lack of elite skill is showing with goals and your offense stat. This from BJ. Pat, from an entertainment perspective, this team's pretty boring. I prefer to see them open it up, even if it means more losses, because I think they'll get stomped in the playoffs anyway. It'd be good to see them try to develop their young players' offensive games rather than the defensive side. This says, don't forget, being in a playoff spot is because Vancouver went off the rails. Very true. This says, if the system's so weighted towards defense, are the goaltenders and defense being overhyped? If offense were to pick up, you'd expect defense to fall off proportionately, and perhaps it would.
I don't know if we've necessarily overhyped the defense and the goaltender. Like, what that, well, and defending is a five-man structure. But the fact that they've managed to do this with the personnel they have on the blue line is another big check mark to the system, in my books.
A few other things to touch on. It's Steinberg Vickers this hour on Flames Talk. Maybe the Flyers could be the magic elixir for what the Flames need to get themselves back on the score sheet. I say that because, you know, the Flyers are not a horrible team defensively, but what they are is the NHL's worst goaltending team. The Philadelphia Flyers have a team save percentage at all strengths of .879.
I don't even know how to react to that, to be perfectly honest with you.
You almost threw up in your mouth.
I choked a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I'm like, ooh, that is not good.
That's really bad. If you're the Flames, please, here's my plea to the Flames. Please don't do what perhaps this team has done in years past and make goaltenders look way better than they are.
Don't get goalied?
Not by this team. Sam Ersson, .893. Fedotov, .883. Kolesov, .870.
Not a nine to be seen in that stat.
No nines in the save percentage for the Philadelphia Flyers. They actually, in terms of high danger chances against, are the fifth best team in the NHL in terms of suppressing high danger qualities per natural stat trick, but the worst team. So they're fifth best, but 32nd overall in goaltending. Geez, Utah's, you show me a team that defends really well, I'll show you a team with a bad goaltender, and that can undo everything.
I'm like, quickly, how big are their defensemen? Try to get to the middle. Yeah. Get those second chances. Or just shoot from anywhere, apparently.
Would you bring Sharangovich back in?
Yep.
What about the two defense?
Yep.
I might keep, I mean, you could keep Bean, Soloviev, 6 and 1/2 the other, but I'm clearly bringing Pahal back in.
Oh, yeah.
I think Pahal coming out was more of a message than it was just a shot at his play.
Yeah,
I think Sharangovic was both. And I'd bring Sharangovic back in. One game message, hey, we need more from you, 17. Please give us more. It's the first time this season Pahal's been healthy scratch. First time this season Sharangovic has been healthy scratch. I'd bring them both back in, though, for the game against the Flyers.
Here's, maybe this paints the picture of the offensive woes perfectly, because I 100% endorse scratching Sharangovic for a single game. I wouldn't go multiple, but for the one game, absolutely. In the 10 games since February 1st, only three players have outscored Sharangovic. Kadri's got 10 and 10. Huberto's got 8 and 10. Mackenzie Weegar has 8 and 10. Sharangovic has 4 and 9. Only two guys have scored more goals over that stretch. But I very much condone from... And again, it's at the end of the day, it's not all about what you put on the stat sheet. It's about how you're playing shift in, shift out. But I was just like, yeah, 100% endorse a single game scratch. And yet pull the splits over the course of the last 10 games. Only three guys have produced more.
Yeah. Okay. Blues, Utah, and Canucks, all within 2 points of the Flames for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. Is this indeed a four-horse race for you? Blues have won 4 of 5. Utah's won 6 of 10. We know Vancouver's scuffling, and the Flames are kind of scuffling along as well.
Yes, it's a four-team race right now. If you ask me again in 1 week, I might say three, because we've heard rumblings out of St. Louis that they're willing to part with some significant veterans. If that's the case, and I remember Nashville from a couple seasons ago, but if they sell off Shannon and a bunch of other parts, I don't see them sticking around. The team that I'm maybe more nervous about than the Canucks would be Utah. They're lingering. They're young. They've got great goaltending.
Super sneaky, good, like super
great coach,
sneaky, skilled.
I wonder how long they float in the picture and if they don't inject themselves more into that. Not that they're not already. As you mentioned, they're 2 points back with one more game played. I'd be a little nervous about Utah.
Yeah, I'm not really. I don't. The Blues are there. I get it. They're a point back, and they've played some good hockey here, and you're right. We'll see what they do at the deadline. In terms of Utah, Flames do have one more game against them on April 1st, so that is...
That could be a massive game.
They're done with the Blues, so they have no more head-to-head. They do have a game coming up next week against the Canucks, so a week from Wednesday, they've got Vancouver... at the Dome, so that's going to be a big game on March 12th, and they do have one more with Utah, and that game is on April 1st in Salt Lake. So in terms of the teams they're in the fight with, they've got one more head-to-head with two of them and zero with St. Louis, so that would be where I say we are.
It'll be exciting, and that's sort of how the... Not to get into a big debate over the point system, how some games are worth two, others are worth three, and we don't need to get into a current status versus 3-2-1. Fact of the matter is parity is phenomenal for the game. And the more teams that are involved in that chase, the better, even though it, from a local perspective, it lowers Calgary's odds just by sheer volume.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if I'm looking at these three teams, sorry, St. Louis, you're pending. I think Utah might concern me more than Vancouver.
Yep.
And I don't know how Vancouver feels in terms of which team scares them the most, or even the flip side with Utah and who they think the biggest opposition is, opposing team is, to hinder their chances at the playoffs. But Utah, I'm going to be keeping a little bit of a close eye on them. I won't lie.
Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. This says from Dylan and Revy, remember what happened last time the Blues GM said he was going to sell the whole team? I believe they won the cup. They did that year. And this says Utah has a week remaining schedule. We'll see how Utah does with that week remaining schedule. Flames and Canucks have the fewest games played each of the four teams in the mix. St. Louis has the most games played, so the least amount of time to make up games or make up points, but on the flip side, less of a condensed schedule. So guess, a double-edged sword in that regard. Steinberg and Vickers coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio this hour. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Monday on Flames Talk, which means it is our regular conversation on the Calgary Wranglers. It's time to check in with head coach Joe Cirella. Since we last spoke with the Wranglers coaching staff, Wranglers fell 4-0 to San Diego Wednesday. They beat Abbotsford 3-2 on Friday, then lost to that same Abbotsford Canucks team 8-4 on Saturday night. Wranglers at 30-18-4. They are second in the American League's Pacific Division. It is Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers, and now Joe Cirella joins us, the head coach of the Wranglers, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Joe, appreciate the time, as always. How are we doing on this Monday?
Doing well. Thanks for asking.
How would you kind of sum up the last week or so for your group? You got the big win on Friday night, but just overall, the last week for the Wranglers, how would you evaluate it?
Well, you know, you're never satisfied, right? When you come away out of our last three games, you know, you've won one and lost two. So, you know, obviously there's, focus that we have to get back to. And, that culture that I keep talking about on the team that, you know, it just hasn't been good enough in the last, basically last 10 games. So, today was a good practice, had a bunch of meetings, just trying to get guys focus back in on, what made us successful in the first part of the year and trying to get back to that.
Any, in your mind, Joe, any reason perhaps why the group has gotten away from the brand and the type of hockey you need them to play?
Well, you don't want to use the personnel, card just because it's the American Hockey League. You're going
to get
different guys, different guys getting called up. You're going to get injuries. You could talk about the coaching changes. It's been a year where there's been a lot of distractions, and we're managing it, and I still think we're trying to manage it. But it's new personnel coming in. We got a couple PTO guys that, have come in. So, they have to start, getting accustomed to, our culture. Our veterans, have to step up and lead the way. And, we just can't have, one guy doing it or one line doing it. We need, all 20 players to continue to play the type of game that we need to play to make us successful. We're not the same team as we were at the start of the year. So now it's just a matter of, addressing and trying to find the right mix of, primary, secondary scoring, defending, goaltending. I think everyone's got to step it up just a touch, and we show spurts of it. Now it's just a matter of continuing it. We had a stretch there playing against Ontario, who's right there with us. And we lost in overtime three games, so it shows that we can be there. It's just a matter of taking that next step and getting the 2 points rather than just the 1 point, right?
Right. Well, and it's funny, Joe, before you came on, we were having a conversation about the Flames and their challenges scoring and their challenges on this road trip. And one of the things we talked about is, hey, I mean, it's been a challenge at times for them all season to score, and they've really leaned into having to be that defensively sound and a really strong structural group. Is that kind of the with all the changeover, as you talked about, your group has gone through, is that important on your end too? Kind of, hey, you know, scoring might be a challenge, but you know, we really need to lean in on being a team that doesn't allow much, doesn't give the opposition much. How important is that?
Well, I wouldn't say it's hand in hand, but I totally agree with it. Like, you know, at the start of the year, we had other players, and you know, a lot of times we would be giving up the same types of chances, but we would outscore the other team, and we knew it wasn't realistic. So, you know, we have to start, you know, taking care of our end and be satisfied to, you know, win that, you know, a 2-1 game or you know, a 3-2 game. And, you know, when you start changing, like not changing it, I just think it's your mindset, where we were trying other things and it was working for us, because, you know, we were outscoring, you know, teams in the first half of the year. And then in our last little stretch here, we were having trouble trying to score. And then, so you address that, and then sometimes you lose the focus of, you know, the defending part as well. So, you know, it's a fine balance between both. I still think you can do both.
Yeah.
You know, the structure is there, that if you teach the concepts offensively, you know, it's not all about scoring off the rush. You know, sometimes, you know, we're a pretty good forechecking team analytically. You know, I think you can create a lot, you know, that type of way, but you can't sacrifice it by cheating too much on the offense, because then, you know, it's just going to be a run and gun game. And, you know, right now I we have a few of the horses that may be able to do that, but you know, when you're a fragile group, in the sense that, you know, you make one mistake when you're cheating and the puck goes in the net and you don't refocus real quickly, you know, it can snowball. And that's basically what's happened in a few of the last, you know, I'm going to say 5 games.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we have to, you know, I think everyone has to buy in and be part of the process of getting us to that next level of, you know, strong defensively, and the offense will come. And I think it's just a matter of getting the confidence. If the guys can get the confidence and see that it works, I think, you know, we can get there a lot quicker.
Joe Cirella's with us. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, joining us here on Flames Talk on this Monday. It's Pat and Aaron as we check in on the number one affiliate of the Flames. Aaron?
Coach, I'm hoping to do a little mini defensive deep dive with you, and I want to start with Hunter Brustavich, because, of course, he's a first-year pro. He's up to 22 points in 53 games for your group. Just curious, where have you seen the biggest strides taken in his game as he's a first-year pro?
Well, Hunter's, you know, he's gradually becoming more confident. And, you know, I think we're pushing him in the direction of, you know, playing that defense first, because we know offensively what he does. And, you know, all season long, we've talked about pace, you know, at this level. And you can see the benefits of it now when you're patient with these players. I know we've had to, you know, had to put them all in and try getting that that quick fix for them. But, you know, and he's done a great job in the last little bit when, you know, we've needed, you know, guys to step up. He's now starting to kill penalties for us, in the sense, you know, when you lose Tenorti, you lose Solyanov, you know, those guys were, you know, basically the guys killing, and Hunter would, you know, get the power play share. But now he's getting, you know, with the addition of Barry, you're seeing a little less of the power play and more of the penalty kill for him. So, you know, I think it's, you know, it's a great development tool for him, in the sense where, you know, he's getting an all-round tutelage of, you know, the AHL and what it means to be that type of player. So, you know, for him, he's taking strides.
Artem Grishnikov had a 20-game stint with your group after being acquired from the Dallas organization last season. He's played 46 games this year. I'm just curious what you've learned about him as you've been around him over the course of 66 games.
You know, he's, as we call him, Grush. At times he's shown, why we acquired him and people like him. You know, when he simplifies his game, makes that first pass, being physical, tight gaps, he's a very effective player at this level. But as every young kid or a lot of the young kids that come in, it's development. So, you want to see that consistency, and he's had his ups and downs. So, for us to get him to where he needs to be, he's just got to, continue to, play without fear and not worry about the mistakes that are made and try limiting the amount that happens with young players. Right. So, for him, it's finding that balance again of, finding the trust that we can put him on these situations to do what he needs to do to get to that, to be the player that he wants to be.
On Jeremy Poirier, he's only 22 years old. Feels like he's been in the organization for quite some time, but I'm just curious the progression you've seen last year to this year after recovering from what was a significant injury.
Well, we talk about Jeremy in the sense that, for him, we know what he could do, offensively with the puck and, the skill that he has. To be an elite puck mover in the NHL, it's about skating, it's about, your vision, but you also have to defend. And the biggest drawback on Jeremy is, his defending portion of it, yeah. of being able to, make the plays when he has the puck, but, you also can't slow the game down to the sense where you because he does make those mistakes. And, for us, if Jeremy can limit those mistakes and defend, consistently, he's going to find himself, maybe with an opportunity, but, until he gets there, it's going to just be the continual development part of it of, limiting those errors and being, the type of player that you can be relied on. And right now there's inconsistencies, and until that, happens, I think, that's when you'll start reaping the benefits.
In terms of opportunity, we saw Jan Kuznetsov get some practice time in during the Four Nations break with the Flames. I'm just curious, from your perspective, what do you appreciate most in his game?
Well, again, he's a professional. He's a big body, has all the tools to be an NHL defenseman. And again, now it's, the consistency part. If anything that's holding him back, it would be to get that little bit of meanness in his games where he can, because he could physically dominate. Yep. Out there, it's not like, I've said it before, it's not about the fighting part of it, but it's, if you're going 10 feet to hit somebody, do it with purpose, opposed to just doing it because you have to or that's what they want me to do. And if you can get that little streak in you, I think you'll find benefits, because guys do not want to play against a hard defenseman. And sometimes, Jan can be a little not easy to play against, because he's, he's so strong anyway. It's like if you're trying to go to the net, on him and he gets the lock on you, like you're not going to get there. But he has to do that consistently. He's got to show a bit of that that attitude. And when you do that, I think, you're going to reap benefits from it.
And I guess the last one for me, Coach, is not necessarily one player specific, but I'm just curious from your perspective, which young guy benefits the most being around Tyson Barrie day in, day out?
Well, you know, we got such a small sample size. You know, you could see, you know, the things that Tyson does with the puck. You know, his smarts. He's not a defensive specialist, but, you know, you can see how he can use his stick and his, you know, his anticipation. So, you know, a guy like Hunter and a guy like Poirier could definitely benefit from, you know, day-to-day just watching him as, you know, how he moves the puck and, you know, the reads that he does. And I think those attributes from Tyson can, you know, do benefits for those young players that are trying to learn.
We're chatting with Joe Cirella, who's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. We talk Wranglers with you on Flames Talk every Monday here on the program. I just wanted to follow up on Barrie because, you know, it's kind of an interesting time in his career. And obviously, you know, he signed the PTO with the Flames and wanted to be in the NHL this year. He spent a little time with your group on the conditioning loan and now is with your team for the foreseeable future. But that's never easy on a guy, but the book on Barrie throughout his career is just how quality a human he's always been in any locker room he's been in. How important are those attributes to your group, and how big is it to have a guy that brings those types of quote unquote intangibles to a young group like yours?
Well, obviously it's a great benefit in the sense because we don't really we had Jared Tenorti here, who was a real good leader in the locker room and a great human, you know, a great professional in the sense that he's all about team first. And with Tyson to get, you know, with Tenorti being hurt now, you know, to bring someone else in that, that aspect is, you know, it's great for the coaching staff. You know, like I said, it's a small sample size because we've only had him, you know, for about a week now.
Yep.
And because he joined us, you know, mid trip in San Diego. So it was great to see him, you know, commit and, you know, and talking to him about, you know, hey, you're here now. You never know what's going to happen. So, you know, we need you to buy in just to show these young guys these things. And, you know, in practice, I've talked to him a few times about, you know, hey, I think it goes wonders if you can go talk to these guys, opposed to always if it's on the power play, if it's Brett or, you know, or myself or things that we've seen. It's always better when it comes from, you know, a teammate that's been there and, you know, that has the resume that he has, that, you know, who he's played with. And, you know, that type of knowledge goes such a long way. And, you know, hopefully those two guys, you know, go talk to him and just pick his brain, you know, whenever they get the opportunity, because, you know, it can do wonders for their career as well.
Joe, it's a you played the two games against Abbotsford, and now you've got Coachella Valley this week at the Dome Tuesday and Wednesday. A couple more home games before you're back on the road. Just tell us about how important these next two games against the Firebirds are going to be.
Wow, they're huge, right? We're you know, when you look at the standings, how much of a logjam it is. You know, it's always good to have good competition because, you know, you can judge yourself for where you are, you know, amongst the leaders in the league. And, you know, it's great to be challenged, and it's going to be a challenge for, you know, our players, especially right now where, you know, we're playing hot and cold sort of hockey, and, you know, to play good teams, you just can't afford to do that. So it'll be good, a good test for us to put 60 minutes in tomorrow, and then, you know, you build from that, and you know, you basically got six periods to play, right? And, you know, that's how we're going to focus it. Let's look at the first 20 and, you know, build from that and go forward and try to show that consistency that we need. You know, we want to make sure that we're prepared and ready, which we will be. And like I said, it's going to be a great challenge for us.
Well, Joe, good luck this week at home to Coachella Valley on Tuesday and Wednesday. And thank you, as always, for the time this afternoon. We really appreciate it. We'll talk soon. Thanks for doing this.
Pat, Aaron, thank you very much. You guys have a great night.
You as well. Have a great week and good luck Tuesday and Wednesday. He's Joe Cirella, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. As we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk, if you're looking for some hockey in the city, some pro hockey in the city this week, Tuesday and Wednesday night, 7 o'clock faceoffs at the Dome for Coachella Valley and the Wranglers. And we'll have Wednesday's game for you live on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, 6 o'clock pregame, and then 7 o'clock puck drop, Wranglers and Coachella Valley on Wednesday. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Thanks to Cam Hughes and Azam Ali Nanji, our outstanding producers. And that'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.